This is the Soulful PR Podcast with Janet Murray, episode 55.
Welcome to the Soulful PR Podcast. Tune in every week for practical tips, strategies, and case studies that will help you get media coverage for your business. And now, here's your host, Janet Murray.
Hello, and welcome to the show. Have you ever had an idea that seemed big and scary and ambitious? You know, one like starting your own magazine and getting people like Richard Branson, Arianna Huffington, and Seth Godin to go on the cover. Well, that's exactly what my guest today, Nathan Chan, did. Without any prior experience or any connections, he decided to start his own magazine for entrepreneurs. And he did exactly that. He got big names like Richard Branson, Arianna Huffington, and Seth Godin on the cover, and many more. And in this episode, he's going to be talking about how he did that. So how he started his own magazine without any prior connections or experience, and how he used his pitching skills and his hustling skills to make all of that happen and turn it into a really, really successful business. But before we get to that interview with Nathan, which is full of really great practical tips and ideas, and also some brilliant hacks on how to find journalist contact details, by the way, I just wanted to mention a few events that I've got coming up over the next few months that I'd love to see you at if you're going, or I'd love you to come along to. So first off, I've got my Soulful PR session in London on May the 19th. And my speaker, my guest is James Hurley, one of the business editors from The Times. So if you're in or near London and you want to come along to that, we're about halfway into the tickets and they usually go very, very quickly. So if you fancy coming along, then I'll link to that in the show notes. I'm also speaking at the New Media Europe Conference on the 18th and 19th of June in London, and I'm talking about how to get big media coverage on a small business budget. So if you're interested in getting some ideas on how to get PR for your business or brand, then do come along to that. It's a great weekend anyway, loads of really, really great speakers, loads of really great practical advice. And if you enjoy geeking out on social media marketing and content marketing and all of that stuff, then you're going to love it. And I'd love to meet you there. So if you're going to be there, then do drop me a line on janet@janetmurray.co.uk and maybe we can hook up and get a coffee. I'm also running my own event, which you've probably heard about already, on July 7th in London. And that is my Soulful PR Live event. I'm really excited about this because for years I've wanted to put on an event specifically for people who run their own businesses or have their own personal brands, where they can get to meet journalists, national journalists, and understand what they're looking for. So I've got speakers from the BBC, from ITV, from the Huffington Post, from Stylist Magazine, from The Guardian, from PA News, so that's a news agency, and various others. And so if you're looking to really raise your media profile, then do come along, meet all these journalists, talk to them, listen to what they've got to say, and it will help an awful lot. So would love to see you at one or all of those events if you're around over the summer months. And do drop me a line if you're coming, and I'd really like to meet up with you there. So now on with the main part of the show. Joining me on the show today is Nathan Chan. Now, Nathan is the publisher and founder of Founder Magazine, that's without an E. It's a digital magazine that's up there now with the big hitters like Entrepreneur and Fast Company. Now, despite starting completely from scratch, as I understand it, with very few connections, he managed to get some huge names on the cover of his magazine. So Richard Branson, Tony Robbins, Seth Godin, and that's just to name just a few. And Nathan also has a massive following on Instagram. And I met him at Tropical Think Tank, so that's Chris Ducker's five-day business mastermind in March. And I was not only blown away by all he'd achieved in such a short space of time, because he's only young, but also by how humble he was about all his achievements. So I hope I've got that all right, Nathan. Welcome to the show.
Yeah, look, that sounds just about right. Look, thank you so much for having me, Jana, and the kind words. It's awesome to be here.
So might you be able to start by telling us a little bit about your business story? Because as I understand it, you went from fixing people's IT problems to setting up a magazine. So it'd be lovely to find out how you got there.
Yeah, sure thing. So pretty much I started Founder March 2013. So we've just turned 3. And I started while I was working my day job. So my background originally was working in computer, like in IT. I was an IT guy. And, you know, I did a master's of marketing because I was trying to find my way just kind of happened is I couldn't really get a marketing job because no one would hire me. So what I ended up doing was going off and kind of finding my own way in the world and trying to find what, like, I guess, work that I was really passionate about, and kind of just fell into creating this magazine. Now, I always wanted to start an online business, but I just didn't know where to start. And I kind of, along the way, identified that there wasn't really a magazine in the space that really tailored and targeted like young, aspiring, early stage, novice entrepreneurs and founders. So thinking of all of that and wanting to do some marketing and just get my hands dirty, I created this magazine. It actually wasn't even called Founder to begin in March. It was called something else, but I had to change the name 4 months in because I was sued for trademark infringement. And yeah, that's a whole nother story. We probably don't have enough time to talk about that. But yeah, I just launched this magazine while I was working my day job. And funnily enough, Janet, it was like I had no idea it was going to be this big startup that it is now. And you know, this media company with, you know, millions of people that read and consume our content every single month. I had no idea that's where I was going to take. I didn't even know, like, when I first started that I wanted to get Richard Branson on the front cover of Founder, or, you know, Tim Ferriss or any of these other people and interview them and all that kind of stuff. It just kind of started from, you know, I kind of had a need. My new podcasts were hot. I was, you know, looking for work that would fulfill me. And yeah, just started as a side project and just kind of took off.
Wow. And can you tell us about the first issue? What was in your first issue?
Yeah. So the first issue of the magazine, I didn't even actually have a successful person on the front cover because no one would get back to me. So I had a stock image on the front cover. So it was like, it's really, really ridiculous. And it's funny, they say that if you're not embarrassed by the first version of your product, you've launched too late.
Right.
And that couldn't be more true for me with the first issue of Founder. It was like a stock image with this guy, like, kind of like dressed up as Superman, and it's like he's trying to rip off his suit, and there's like you know, the t-shirt underneath. It was super ridiculous. So yeah, that was the first issue.
And what sort of content did you have in there? What sort of articles?
So I had actually a few personal development articles. Geez, you're testing me because it was quite a long time ago. But I did do one interview, but for some reason I didn't decide to put this person on the front cover. It was this girl from Australia, and she's called the Outsourcing Angel, which is funny, you know, because you just talked about Chris Ducker and you know, he's a big outsourcing guru. And yeah, I'll never forget just being super, super nervous. Like, I don't even know why we still have that first issue there. Like, we should just hit a big, like, just press a big delete on that thing. Like, it's so embarrassing. And like, I remember I was so nervous doing that interview. Like, if you go and download the first issue of the magazine, you'll see there's like a YouTube video of me doing that interview.
Right.
It's kind of hilarious thinking back. But so yeah, we had a piece on her about outsourcing and stuff like that, a few personal development pieces. But to be honest, Jen,
Such a long time ago.
Yeah, I don't remember that many of the pieces, to be honest.
And did you lay it out yourself and design it yourself, or did you have someone helping you?
So from the start, we've always, and this was like a really key move that I made in the early days, before I even started, I knew the power of just great design. I didn't know it like I know it now, but I had an inkling that if you're going to create a magazine, you want it to look good. And I was fortunate enough to meet an amazingly talented designer from India, and he's become a great friend. His name's Karan. And, you know, I actually ended up going to his wedding a while back with my girlfriend, actually in India. But we've become great friends from working together, and he still designs a magazine to this day. But when I first met Karan, he was like, you know, like, dude, you got to focus on design. Design's where it's at. Trust me. Just please, just trust me. And I just kind of took his word for it. And he had designed many other magazines before. So, you know, with the exchange rate, that did help with production. And then also I in regards to the content, I was just really winging it, Janet. Like, I was just... Like, I got my mum to proofread it. There were still so many mistakes.
Mm.
You might probably even find a couple of mistakes if you went back right now. Yeah. Like, I got my friend to help me write some articles and ghostwrite some stuff. He was my housemate at the time. Yeah, well, it was, yeah.
Blimey. So, I mean, but what I love about that is that you just kind of got on and did it. And funnily enough, I was in my Facebook group this morning and someone posted up a quote about, you know, starting before you're ready. And if you kind of sit there just kind of procrastinating about it, you know, at some point you just got to get on and do it and accept that it's not going to be perfect. And like you say, you might go back and cringe at your first product, but you did it and you've come a long way, I guess.
Yeah, look, I think that's really important because now, like, you know, we know what we're doing and we can do a good job. And, you know, it's not that we didn't do a good job, right? Like, there was still some value there. And even on the first day when we launched, we made $5, which is really, really cool because this was, you know, I created a magazine that no one had heard of, that had no credibility in the space, that was produced by someone that knew nothing about entrepreneurship, nothing about design, nothing about editorial, nothing about apps. I didn't know nothing. And it wasn't like, you know, it was a polished turd or anything, there was, you know, some great pieces in there, and, you know, people believed enough to even, you know, purchase the magazine on the first day it was launched, which was really, really cool.
And can you quickly tell us a story about you being sued? Because this might be helpful. If someone out there is thinking about launching something, then if you could give us a very quick summary of what happened.
Yeah, sure. So I obviously can't give legal advice, but pretty much I stupidly called the magazine something else. And that's why we call it Founder without the E. There is actually, to this day, nothing out there called Founder Magazine with the E. But, you know, I had to take the E out after the lawsuit because I wanted to make sure I'd never be sued again. And what happened was, you know, I stupidly created the magazine in the early days with the name that resembled somebody else, another big magazine. And then they quickly caught up with me in the early days. And I actually got, you know, served in the mail. We were sued by one of the biggest business magazines in the States.
Oh, God.
And yeah, just a lot of hard lessons learned. I think the biggest thing to take away just from that experience is never err on the side of caution. If you think, oh, yeah, it won't happen to me, or it probably won't happen to me, just you never know, right?
Mm. Yeah. And what tips would you have? I mean, for example, I haven't as yet trademarked the name of my brand, this Soulful PR, and I'm conscious that I need to start thinking about this. I probably should have. It's just, you know, it started off as a kind of product. I started off with one product. It kind of, you know, people got interested in it, and now I've got a whole range of products. And what tips would you have around that? I know you're not a legal expert, but do you have any tips on that sort of area?
Yeah, look, I think if you want to have any sort of longevity with your brand, I think you should definitely trademark it. That's just me, though. I learned the hard way. So, you know, we trademark. So for us, we have you know, the Founder brand, right? But then we also have other products underneath, like, you know, we just I know you mentioned off air you launched a membership site. You know, we have a membership site. It's called Founder Club. So there's no need for us to actually go and get the trademark Founder Club because it falls under the same mark. So, yeah, look, it really depends. I believe, though, that if you see yourself doing what you do with your business for a reasonable period of time and you want to take it seriously, I think a big part of that is, you know, trademarking the name, getting the domain. You know, if you have to pay someone, like you know, someone might have that domain or the .com domain. You know, we're going through that stage right now, which is extremely frustrating. You know, we're going through also the stage of getting all the social media handles for Founder. Unfortunately, a lot of randoms have like Founder without the E with the one word.
Yeah.
You know, we're going through the process of creating a Wikipedia site and getting all of our social media accounts verified. You know, these are things that you just have to do, I think, if you want to take your brand to the next level. And so that's what, you know, what we're always thinking about now.
Yeah. And I guess a lot of us, we start our businesses or we start, you know, like I did with Soulful PR, I just started it as a kind of single product. It kind of caught on, people got interested in it. And then suddenly you're like, oh my God. And I guess that happens for a lot of people is that you start something small. It's like we were talking off air, weren't we, about, you know, minimal viable product and just trying something out, seeing if people were interested. And, you know, in your case, you started a side business. So I guess that some of these issues don't come up until you actually kind of get going. And one of the reasons I wanted to get you on the show is when you spoke at Tropical Think Tank, you talked about getting these big names to be on the cover of your magazine, despite not having any track record in journalism, from what I could gather, or in the media, you managed to get these massive people. And you talked about kind of how you did that. And obviously what I talk about a lot on the Soulful PR podcast is pitching and how to get people to say yes to you. And, you know, sometimes people who are very busy, sometimes people who, you know, it's very hard to get hold of. So I wondered if you could talk to us a little bit about that, about how you managed to get big names like, well, the big one obviously is Richard Branson, but Tony Robbins, Seth Godin. How did you get those people to say yes to you, and what was involved?
Yeah, so first things first, Janet, I think the big part of it for us is having a magazine allows people to take your brand really seriously as opposed to having just a blog. I think having a magazine has a certain level of authority, even more than a book. You know, everyone's launching books these days just as an authority piece. I think having a magazine's even stronger than that. And, you know, you can use the cover to play on people's ego as well, which can be used to your advantage. And also, you know, we got a big break with, you know, Sir Richard Branson saying yes. Now, here's the thing, right, Janet? Now we're speaking in magazine worlds. You know, Richard Branson has been on the front cover of pretty much every single decent business magazine, right? So, you know, even heaps that me or you have never even heard of. Like, I might go to the newsstand in the newsagents and you there's be like a random business magazine you've never heard of, and Richard Branson will be on the front cover. Like CEO magazine. I think that's just an Australian magazine. Like, maybe they have a big circulation here in Australia. I don't know. But like, I'd seen him on the front cover of that magazine. And that's the thing, right? So he'd be on the front cover of every single decent sized business magazine. And that's actually not that much of a big deal, right? So to me, it was like, well, if he's been on the front cover of every other, you know, person's magazine, why can't he be on the front cover of Founder? And that's the kind of way that I thought about it. And in the early days, you know, just before I got sued, so we were sued for trademark infringement in the first 4 months. Just before I got sued, I actually started pitching, and I was trying to fill up the magazine covers and features for the rest of the year. And I kind of got lucky, but at the same time, you know, I was quite persistent. So the way that I got in touch with Sir Richard Branson was, you know, we talk about books. A lot of people publish books. A lot of these people that we've interviewed publish books. So a lot of the publishers of these books are looking for press always. And I ended up finding calling up Random House and then finding, you know, from them the number, someone at Virgin. And, you know, first things first, I made a lot of phone calls. I think that's very, very key. And then I ended up pitching the head of PR for Virgin. And she was the person that was like the gatekeeper. So what you'll find with all of these people is their time is so extremely important to them, and everybody wants their time. They have to have someone that like they won't even know about the request. There's this person, they leave all onus on this person to make a decision. And whether this person's a gatekeeper, like it's a PR person or an assistant, or it's even a PR agency that handle all media requests, you kind of have to do your best job to convince those people. Now, for me, you know, my pitch was I played on the fact that Branson's first business venture was a magazine, a student magazine. I also played on the fact that we were a magazine that had a young audience, and we're educating the leaders of today and the future leaders of today. And I know he's very big on that kind of stuff. And, you know, I just asked. I think a lot of the time, you know, 99% of the time, people just don't ask. And I just asked. And, you know, he said yes. It wasn't a Skype interview. It was an email interview. Pitch for a Skype interview, but got an email interview. And yeah, just kind of took that and ran with it. And then from there, I've been able to use that as leverage to interview many other successful people in the entrepreneurial niche. So Tony Robbins, for example, and Tim Ferriss, they both share the same PR agency. So I built a really good relationship with those guys. So when the time was right, you know, Tony was launching a book, boom, I just came to them. Tim Ferriss, he was launching his TV show. Boom, I just came to them. Ariana Huffington just pitched her cold. Damon John pitched his team cold from the website. Barbara Corcoran pitched her team cold from the website. Gary Vee, his team come to me because we built up a bit of clout. But a big part of it as well is we don't interview just, you know, these, you know, celebrities in the entrepreneur niche. We also interview a lot of very, very hard to reach founders that create these amazing companies, but you might not see them so much in the media. They might not be so much thought leaders, but, you know, they probably make more money than, you know, a Tim Ferriss or whoever. They run these, you know, billion-dollar companies. And a big part of it, if we were to break it down, would be one, identifying if they are looking for press and always thinking about what's the mutually beneficial exchange in value and always thinking of an angle that you can play it that would make things sound interesting to them, make them at least want to open your email, make them at least want to pick up your phone calls. So that's the first piece. So if people are looking for press or you want to make people look good, then you know, you've got to come up with a great angle. So for us, you know, we have relationships with a lot of PR agencies, and these PR agencies, they, you know, represent companies like Slack, and they want to look good if, you know, Slack is paying them $5,000 a month or $10,000 a month to get press. So they want to look good if they can get the founder or, you know, a co-founder on the front cover of a magazine and like a, you know, a podcast interview and a mail out and all these things, you know, with a community of 1 million+ people. So that will make them look good. So that's the first piece of the puzzle, is just having a good angle. And the second piece of the puzzle is identifying who these people are. Who are the gatekeepers? Who are the ones that are going to hold you back from being able to get that interview, whether it's a PR agency, whether it's an assistant, whether it's they have their own internal PR. There's someone that makes a decision. There's someone that handles all those requests. And you have to write a really, really good email, because once you've identified those people, you have to write a really, really good email. And some great tools to find those people's emails is there's emailhunter.co.
Yep, I've been using that since you introduced me to it. So thank you for that. Yeah,
that's awesome. And another thing you can do is there's a Gmail plugin if you use Google. There's a Gmail plugin called Reportative. And what you can do is sometimes I just guess the emails. You can use Email Hunter and it'll tell you like the syntax. So it might be like firstname.lastname@domainname. Or it might be first initial and then a first initial of the first name and then last name. So N Chan or J Murray at domain name. So Email Hunter can help you kind of work out what the potential email address will be. And then if you use a tool like Reportative, and then you type in the guest, like the email that you're guessing, and if you hover over that email, if that person's photo comes up and Reportative can pull their details, I don't know how, it's an amazing tool. If that person's photo comes up, then that email is the correct email. Another way you can find out their email also is if you do a who.is search. So everybody that registers their domain name for their business, generally what happen is they'll be asked if they want to shadow their details, and GoDaddy will try and upsell you for like an extra $20 a year. And a lot of people don't click on it and say, yes, they want to shadow it. So a lot of these founders, right, I've found, they have personal blogs and stuff like that. And when you do a who.is search, you can, you know, they don't shadow their email address. And this is a legit email because this is the email that they used to sign up for their domain name. And this is the one that the domain name registrar, the company that registered for them, will say, hey, you need to renew your domain name. So you know it's going to be a legit email, because no one ever wants to ever miss the domain name renewal email where you have to renew it, you know, because you lose it otherwise, right? Someone else could get it. You know, that's a great little hack. That hack in particular I used to get in touch with Justin Kahn, and he was the founder of Twitch TV and sold Twitch to Amazon for over close to $1 billion. You know, so this is someone that a lot of people might never have heard of, but this guy's like super boss in my world. And, you know, he had a personal blog, and that's how I found out his email address.
I think that's quite a good tip as well, because when I'm pitching people, if I'm pitching for big podcasts, actually, something that I do is I don't like using contact forms, because I often think, well, there's probably a VA or something at the end checking that, and then I want to get to the person. So I'll try and work out what their personal email address is or their Gmail or something like that, because I think it's got a better chance of getting in front of them. And that has worked for me, actually. And I've got a personal reply sometimes from people that I wouldn't have expected to, because I've just put in a little bit more time trying to actually make sure it gets to them rather than go into some sort of contact form system. And it doesn't always work, but personally, I think these things are worth spending a little bit more time on.
Yeah, I agree. Once you've found the person's email or their contact details, then the next piece of the puzzle is writing a really, really good email. And if you go to our website, we wrote a really in-depth blog post about this. If you go to foundermag.com/get interviews, G-E-T interviews with an S at the end, we wrote like a 7,000-word blog post that summarizes a lot of
this stuff. Fantastic. I'll link to that in the show notes.
Yeah. And, you know, we actually show like some of the email templates we use as well. And one thing we try and do with the email template when we mail people is we want to make it what I call an absolute no-brainer. You know, we talk about, you know, all of our reach. We upload an issue, usually the Branson issue, just establish ridiculous amounts of rapport and credibility. And we showcase a lot of social proof, and we say, we featured this person, this person, this person. And another thing which is a good way to do it is ask for introductions. Another good way to get interviews is to ask for introductions. So, for example, if you interview someone that's super, super successful, ask them to introduce you to a certain person or ask them if they'd be open to that. That's a great way to go about it as well. But, yeah, with the email, you really, really want to stack it. So for us, this is how we play it. We give a lot of numbers around reach. Then we upload the Branson cover. We might upload our media kit as well. And that's how we do it. And then I think a really great tool is it's called rebump.cc. The reason I'm mentioning this tool is when you send the email, don't expect people to write back from the first email. So you want to use a tool like rebump.cc, which is another Gmail plugin. And what it does is it does automated follow-ups. So what you can do is Rebump will actually, there'll be a little box. Once you install it and set it up, there'll be a little box you can tick every time you send an email. And what will happen is Rebump will be constantly scanning your inbox to see if someone replies. And if they don't reply, you can set up pre-composed templates and as many as you want in whatever time period. So we have, for when I'm doing biz dev all the time and pitching, I will do, every time I send an email, I'll always do the rebump. And the templates I have would be like the first one, I send a follow-up email in 7 days saying, you know, hey, I know you're super busy. Just want to double check that this one hasn't fallen off your radar. Hope all is well. Then I have another one that goes out another 7 days and another one in 2 weeks. And you know, after we get to about fourth or fifth email, I just say, hey, look, don't want to be annoying. Just one last chance just to see if, you know, you got my email.
That's such a good tool. Yeah.
Yeah. So it automates follow-up, because I think there's some kind of psychological barrier that you have to go through if you do this stuff manually. Like if you've got to the second email, even just remembering.
Exactly.
We've all got so much on our mind. But even just remembering and just writing that a second time, just in your stomach, I think you feel like you're a nuisance, you're annoying, you're not worthy, you think this person might think you're an idiot, so they're ignoring you. So if you automate that process and let the technology do the work, you can't stop.
It's such a good idea. I mean, I personally, I have a policy where I make a pitch every day for something. So I either pitch to a media outlet, or I pitch to somebody to come on my podcast, or I pitch myself to somebody's podcast or whatever it might be. But I have a pitch a day policy. And I manage it a lot of the time just by remembering it, or I've got the odd spreadsheet or something. So I'm certainly going to be using that to keep on top of my pitching. And how important is your email subject header? So something I always say to people is that, you know, the kind of people you're pitching to are generally very, very busy. So if you can come up with a really strong subject header that kind of summarizes what it is that you're offering, then you're going to increase your chances of getting attention. Would you agree on that?
Yeah, I would. For sure, 100%. That's like email marketing 101, right? You get cut through. So we're always thinking of like crazy headlines to get people trying to open up our stuff. Same thing goes with the pitching, and I do it too. For me, I usually just write, because have to be kind of professional, I just say like front cover magazine feature,
right?
You know, or whatever, like, or magazine, you know, magazine feature or something. And people open that.
Yeah.
That's interesting. But there is a good one that I've got that I know it like opens like crazy, is if you know that person's name, say, Janet.
Yeah.
We need to talk. Dot, 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 dot.
Oh, that's interesting. Oh, that's really interesting.
So if you saw that, Janet, you would be like,
what have I done?
What is this? So try that one.
Yeah.
And I promise you'll get a good result.
That's interesting because I often end up talking because I work with a lot of Brits. I mean, I work with people around the world, but Brits are quite sensitive with email marketing. Whenever I interview a Brit, we always end up talking about this. But with email marketing, you have to be really, really careful. I've tried those, you know, when you send out an email that says, you know, we should meet for coffee or something like that. And I would all get 20 emails back going, I really thought you were asking me for coffee. I'm really disappointed now. But also like the Brits, it's really interesting. It's quite culturally sensitive, I think, that we're kind of less tolerant to kind of anything that kind of seems to be pushy or whatever. So I'm going to try that. I'm going to try We Need to Talk and see what happens. I'm sure I'll probably have some quite interesting emails off the back of that one because I've got quite a lot of Brits on my email list.
Yeah, no, look, I think that one's a good one because it's like a happy medium, right? It doesn't make any promises around coffee, but you do want to talk. Like, you do want to say something like, what's up? So you want to pitch for a podcast? I reckon that's gold.
Yeah,
like,
yeah.
You pitch for a podcast, whatever their name is, we need to talk, dot, 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 dot. And then you get them with the hook and you say, I can talk about this, 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 and this. And you stack it with things that you know are really high value that people want to ask about. So,
But one thing I find when people pitch me for my podcast, it's kind of like a bugbear of mine. I actually get most of my own guests on the podcast because, you know, when you've got a show, it's like having a magazine, isn't it? So you've got an idea of what kind of content you want to run and, you know, you're quite, I guess, quite fussy about who you have on and what they talk about and you're trying to kind of, you know, balance the content. So you've got your kind of agenda. But when people pitch me, I find that they generally pitch me, it's all about them. So it's kind of like, here's the reasons why you should have me on your podcast because it will help me. Now, when I'm pitching people, I'm always like, look, these are the things that I can offer your audience. You know, this is how I think I could help. This is what I know about. And even where I know that the person's got a much bigger audience than me, I'll still try and pull out whatever I can. You know, I've got 5,500 people on my email list, which I know is like small compared to people I'm pitching to. But I know that that's still a significant number of people. I've got 12,000 followers on Twitter. And so I'll just try and basically kind of saying, you know, this is what I can offer in terms of content. And this is how I can help you get the word out to other people about what you do, even in my own small way. And sometimes I'll make a joke about it. If they're a big person, I'll kind of say, look, I know it's small fry compared to you, but it's still these, you know. But I find when people are pitching me, often they make it all about them. And I found what works for me is just trying to basically say, look, this is how I can help you out, or this is how, you know, we could help each other out. Is that something that you found works for you?
Yeah, that's spot on. So with full transparency, I don't pitch myself to many podcast interviews. I have a couple of times if I really, really want to get on a show, like I target and snipe a certain show that I really want to get on. And you're spot on. Like, I know that there's certain things that people want to know about that I can add a ton of value that would be hot for their audience. Like this whole influencer, you know, interviewing, getting interviews kind of thing, people always ask me this question. So I know if I can say, I can share with your audience how we got an interview of Richard Branson from starting a magazine from scratch and the exact process. I can share how we've built an email database of, you know, 200,000 in about 14 months and, you know, how we built 100,000 of that from Instagram and how we built our Instagram from this, you know, from 0 to 700K in like 16 months. And then how we built this top 10 ranked business and investing magazine that sits next to Forbes, Fast Company, and Entrepreneur. You know, how we built like a multiple seven figure business in like 3 years. And this is my first serious business. Like all those things that I just said, people love to hear. And that's because I just know how to sell it, right? So yeah, I can say I can do this for your audience. You know, I teach them this, teach them that. And yeah, I think what's in it for me always, whether you're marketing yourself, whether you're pitching yourself for PR, whether you're selling something,
you always got to stack it with benefits, I think, for that, for the person reading it.
Mm, you got to make it about them, about how you can help them.
Exactly right.
And I just wanted to pick up, because I'm conscious of time, I wanted to pick up on something that you mentioned to me when we were chatting at Tropical Think Tank. And I was talking about getting coverage on big news sites like Huffington Post and Business Insider, Forbes and Entrepreneur, places like that. And you started telling me about a little hack that you'd come up with about how you can sort of, because it's tough. I mean, I've been published in all of the UK press pretty much, and I write for Entrepreneur now, I write for Huffington Post, but it's really, really tough. I mean, I know how to do it because it's, you know, I've done it everywhere else. It's about, you know, it's hustle. It's about, you know, tracking people down. It's about following people up. It's about being really tenacious in terms of, you know, getting the right ideas in front of the right people and all your research and stuff. However, I'd love some hacks. And you mentioned to me, and I don't know if you can remember what you said to me, a couple of shortcuts about how you can kind of circumvent, I think that's the word that I need, that kind of process. Can you remember what it was that we were talking about?
Yeah, I think so. Right now, if you want to get like an article written about you in mainstream media, for example, on Forbes or Inc., Entrepreneur, like I can only talk in my world, Janet, because that's what I obsess about, like the niche and market that we serve with Founder. So if you want to get an article, like, you know, in a TechCrunch or whatever, right, generally you used to just think about it like, I've got to find the writer, the person that works there, and pitch them over Twitter or whatever. But now more and more what is happening is all of these publications, and I'm talking everywhere, even like the Mashables and the TechCrunches, they have all opened up their publishing and contributing to anyone. And so much to the point that if you know the right people, in the sense that you know, the person that manages the contributors, you know, if you write a good piece, it's a lot easier for them just to give you a login to their WordPress site and submit a piece, as opposed to, you know, pitching them, getting it approved by them, you know, sending them a draft. Like, you can just go ahead, upload it onto WordPress or whatever their CMS is, and actually just submit it, and then they approve it, whether they approve it or not. And you actually become a formal contributor. And the reason they've done this, and all these content powerhouses are doing this right now, is because everyone is so ridiculously hungry for content right now. So much to the point that they can't even keep up, and they can't even make it cost affordable for them to hire writers, because all these media companies are struggling big time. So their answer to it is to just produce more content at scale for more eyeballs, to sell more ads, to sell more banner ads, and actually get a huge proportion of contributors that write for free. And that's essentially where it's at now, right? So if you want to be a contributor to Mashable, all you need to do is know the contributing editor. And what you'll find also is places like Mashable, they have now an Australian arm and a UK arm. So if you know, if you can find the editor in your country, it'll make things even easier to say, hey, I've got this article, like, I'd love to contribute. And if you can pitch something that's good, more times than not, if you build that relationship, you can actually get a login, and then you can write all the time.
And that's what I've done with the Huffington Post. And I mean, Entrepreneur, I've done that. So I pitched an initial idea, I found the right person, it took me a while, and then you can upload. But the thing is with them, they have such a queue of content that, you know, last piece I wrote for them, it was like 30 days before it went up, which is frustrating. And you were also saying that another way around it, I think, was to, if you know somebody who's already got, you know, that they're already signed up as a contributor, to kind of maybe work with them and kind of feed them ideas where they, if you've got something useful to contribute, where maybe they talk about you in their article or something like that. Was that something, I think that was kind of what you were saying to me, was it?
So, yeah, we can go back to like old school SEO tactics. I don't know if it's old school, but what you can do is, like, I have friends right now that have logins for Inc., Fast Company, Forbes, Entrepreneur. And I say, hey, if you're going to write anything on Instagram or anything social media, just make sure you mention Founder and link back to this article. We're trying to rank for it.
Yeah.
And people can do that. And then you're so-called, you know, mentioned. you know, featured in Forbes. It's just so dumb. But like, this is how it all works now. It's just kind of like, it's crazy, right? Because so many people, right, would look at that and be like, oh my God, you know, you guys are featured in Forbes, but it's just all architected. Look, you can do it all now. It's actually quite easy. You just got to know the right people. So like, you know how sometimes you see these lists where people say like the top 10 people to follow on Snapchat right now, and it's like an article on Forbes. All that is someone just having a login and just a lot of the time mentioning their friends.
Yeah, yeah. You know, I totally, I've seen it. Yeah, yeah.
And seriously, and then you see these people that go around and say, yeah, you know, I was a top 10 most, you know, most favorited person to follow on Snapchat, vote like listed by Forbes, which is so not true. But it's just, you know, people play on that. You can play on that stuff now. It's very, very easy to architect that stuff. So is that what you wanted me to talk to you about,
Janet? Yeah, I think so. Yeah, because it sounds quite similar to the press. So I often say, I run events in the UK where I get all, you know, I'll get all sort of key journalists to come along and talk about what they're looking for. But I often say to people, try and befriend freelancers, because freelancers often have relationships with lots of different editors on different titles. They also, they've already got a bit of an in, and they've got insights and connections. You know, when they pitch an idea, they'll probably get an answer straight away if they've got an established relationship, whereas you might have to wait and that kind of thing. But I think often people think they have to go to the chief, you know, they have to go to the kind of head honcho person. But actually, I really encourage people to make those relationships with freelancers, because I think they can make their life easier, because they can work with them, or they can feed them, you know, an article idea. And I guess it's the same kind of principle with the guest postings type area, is that, you know, it might actually be beneficial to think a bit creatively about this and befriend some people who are already contributors and feed them ideas and say, hey, why don't you do a piece about this? And, you know, I could help you with it. So I guess it's just, as with all of these things, it's about thinking creatively and how can you get the same outcome possibly without having to put in the same sort of work, I guess. It's just kind of hacks, really, isn't it?
Yeah, yeah. Because I was going to say, the game has changed now. To get featured in the media, it's not as, I believe, it's maybe not as difficult as it used to be. And there's like kind of puppet strings getting played. Like I'll blatantly tell you, Janet, and share with your audience, like, you know, one of the deals that I'm cutting with someone right now. Some young kid, he come to me, he's younger than me, and he seemed pretty young, maybe like 19. And he come to me and said, oh, you know, I love what you're doing with Founder, Nathan. Really nice guy. Seemed like a really nice guy over email. And he said, oh, look, just wanted to let you know that I love your podcast and everything you're doing for the entrepreneurial community. And I just want to say, just let me know if there's anything I can help. And also, by the way, you know, I'd love to be featured on your podcast. You know, this is the stuff I could talk about with your audience. And the guy actually seemed like pretty legit, like he actually knew his stuff. And I said, look, you know what? I'll have a think about an interview. Thank you so much for getting in touch. And when I looked at his reportative, you know, I love that tool, reportative, because when anyone cold emails you, on the right-hand side, it brings up a whole profile about them. And I saw on the right-hand side, one of his things in his LinkedIn was contributor at Inc.
Ah, yeah.
So what do you know? I say, okay, well, you know, you can, you know, actually you can help me. I can see you're a contributor at Inc. Can you write a story about Founder? And it's like, boom, done. You see what I mean? It's just like, like, you know, I might end up featuring him in the podcast. I don't know. We'll see how we go. But you can cut deals like that flat out. And you can architect it all. Like, you know, we're trying to get a Wikipedia at the moment, so we need more features. We need to get in the New York Times and the Wall Street Journal. And, you know, I'm going to have to probably cut deals or pay someone to you know, do this stuff. So, yeah.
Yeah, that's really interesting. And one last thing I wanted to ask you, because I'm aware we've run a little bit over time, is about how you've grown your community and your following through Instagram. I think you mentioned some figures before about how massively and how quickly you'd grown your audience and your email subscribers. Can you just tell us a little bit about how you've done that?
Sure. We've been on Instagram since November 2014. So I think that's getting close to 17 months now. And we've built that from zero to, I think, 750K. And generate a lot of traction for the business, a lot of growth for the business. A lot of our audience hangs out there. And it's been an amazing channel for customer acquisition for us. Now, there's a few key things to take away if you want to be able to, I guess, tap into what we've done. The first is for us, you know, we've posted awesome content that our audience love, and that's on a consistent basis. So for us, quotes seem to work really, really well. Business and quotes, motivational quotes, startup tips and facts. People seem to love that stuff, especially on Instagram. Also on Pinterest too, and Facebook and Twitter. Same thing. People just love to share them, tagging their friends, but they can go like really viral on Instagram. Like we can post, you know, some and they get like, you know, 10,000, 20,000 likes per image, or like 1,000 plus comments. And these comments are not just people saying, yeah, this is awesome. It's comments where people are tagging in their friends and their friends are checking it out, and then they're following us. So we post a lot. We post anywhere between 6 to 10 times a day, because we worked out the more we post, the faster we grow. And it kind of makes sense, right? You know, if you can post epic content on a consistent basis, it'll build momentum over time. But if you can post epic content at scale, like relentlessly, like I'm talking crazy, not to the point of spam, but like, you know, entrepreneur, you could say entrepreneur spammers, they post like 20 articles a day.
Yeah,
right?
But there's some really good stuff in there, isn't there? It's valuable stuff.
So you just become a content powerhouse. That's, you know, for our Instagram, we are an absolute content powerhouse. We post every 2 hours.
Oh, really? And that's really interesting. Yeah.
Yeah. So that's why it's fueling the growth. And then the next piece of the puzzle is the stuff looks good. So it's great content that looks good, that our audience loves over a consistent basis, that looks good. And then, you know, we get the biggest secret is shout outs. We get as many people as we can to share our content. And these are other big accounts with big followings. And if we can do that as many times as possible, we try and do sometimes maybe 5 a day. Yeah, that just crushes.
And when you say shout outs, how do you do that? Do you tag them into your posts?
Yeah. So you tag, yeah. So it's like a partnership. Scratch my back, scratch yours. So like you can do partnership style, what's it's called S for S.
Yeah, yeah.
Where people will share your content and you share theirs. Or you can pay people for shout outs. You can pay influencers or accounts that are serving a niche or market similar to you.
And do you pay, or do you generally do the S4S route?
We don't know. We don't really pay. We have before, and we've tested all that stuff. We've done some really cool stuff. Like we went through a bit of a paying spree, but it wasn't to gain followers. It was to gain email subscribers. And at one point, we generated 30,000 leads in 1 month from paying quite a bit. And It was pretty lucrative at one point in time. We don't do it that much anymore,
though. And that was for shout outs on Instagram, was it, or was that elsewhere?
Yeah. Instagram, working with influencers, yeah.
Wow, gosh, that's so, so interesting. Oh, well, thank you so much. You've shared so much valuable stuff. And just in terms of the tools that you've shared, I mean, I was using some of them already because you told me about the Tropical Think Tank, but I know there's a few more that I need to use. So thanks so much for that. And where can we find you? Where's the best place to find you and your content?
So if you want to find out more, you can just go to foundermag.com, foundrmag.com. If you want to know a little bit more about Instagram, you can download like this awesome ebook we created. You go to foundermag.com/free. Yeah, that's about it.
Yeah, and I've got the guide myself and it's excellent. So I would highly recommend it. So thank you so much for that, Nathan.
You. Oh, you're welcome, Janet. Thank you so much for having me.
You've been listening to the Soulful PR Podcast with Janet Murray. If you enjoyed the show, why not come on over and join my Facebook group? It's simply the Soulful PR Facebook community, and I'd love to see you there.
You've just been listening to the Soulful PR Podcast with Janet Murray. If you enjoyed the show, she'd really appreciate you leaving a review on iTunes. And don't forget to head over to www.janetmurray.co.uk for more free content that will help you get media coverage for your business.